All right, guys, we're going to get to your Monday Night Raw review, and boy, did a lot happen this past Monday. As we get closer to Extreme Rules a week from Sunday, there's a lot we're going to cover with the new United States Championship belt that was unveiled. Nikki Cross, inexplicably, on Monday Night Raw. Randy Orton continuing to build magnificent heat. And yeah, Heath Slater was back on Monday Night and probably had the promo of his career. We're going to get to all of that and so much more right after this. Hey guys, so retirement may or may not be something that you're really thinking about, but even if you are years and years away, I mean, I'm 20 years away from retirement, but it's something that we should all be thinking about. There's a company that has retirement plans that you can invest in precious metals like gold, silver, and cryptocurrency. There's also a big opportunity to grow retirement and grow income for either your personal or a business. And anyone who signs up at this website receives a free investment kit and gift. So what is this website? It's brightmoneyinvestments.com. That's brightmoneyinvestments.com. You can diversify and grow with metals and cryptos, and you can even talk to someone there to get a better idea of what you should be investing in. So head on over to brightmoneyinvestments.com.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast, the most passionate and authentic wrestling analysis on the web. We've got you covered with every Raw, SmackDown, and NXT show, giving you a no bullshit opinion. We know you love wrestling. We do too. So let's get this show underway.
And that's the bottom line. What? Cause Stone Cold said so.
All right, welcome to the WWE Podcast on this Tuesday, July 7th, 2020. Hope everyone's doing well. We got a lot to discuss tonight with Monday Night Raw from last night, and that's a good thing. I have a lot of positives, believe it or not, to go over from Monday Night Raw that were just excellent from an in-ring perspective or from a storyline perspective. And we're going to get to that, including the new United States Championship belt and my thoughts on that and some other things as well that I didn't talk about in the open. So we've got a lot to discuss, as I said, and we're going to get to all of that. But first, welcome to the show, guys. If you're new, this is the WWE Podcast. We are an unofficial version of the show, of course. We're not an official version of WWE, nor are we affiliated in any way at all. I get that question a lot. I've actually, when I had my Twitter account many moons ago, which is going on 2 months now, that many people ask me, hey, are you with WWE? I want to meet so-and-so. And it's like, yeah, no, I'm not. Do you see the blue check mark? No. Do you see me using the WWE logo? No. So I'm not affiliated with WWE in any way, which is great because I can just say what I want, do what I want, and I don't have to worry about mommy and daddy listening and being, you know, sent to my room for being naughty on the show. I can just do whatever the hell I want, which is awesome. And so I think it's an advantage rather than a disadvantage to not be affiliated with WWE itself, which is great. So anyway, thank you guys for taking your time to listen to this show. And we're going to get to all of Monday Night Raw, which again, as I said, I think was an overall really good show. I mean, especially from the women's perspective, the women killed it on Monday night. The men were hit and miss. And when it hit, it really hit. And when it missed. And it missed bad. So we're going to get to the men in a minute. But first, look, the women on Monday night have been consistently good for a period of time now. And they showed you why they main evented Monday Night Raw. They gave you a validation that they do belong in the main event of Raw. And does that mean always? No, of course not. No, I don't think anybody just deserves to be anywhere just because they're a certain gender, right? To me, you earn the spot, period, regardless of whatever it may be or whoever you may be. And the women certainly have earned it. And this Monday Night Raw, this past one last night, with Asuka and Bayley main eventing Raw, I think absolutely killed it. They had a pay-per-view quality match. Was it as long as a pay-per-view match? No. But it was a pay-per-view quality match from an effort, physicality, believable, near fall, and finish match. Now, the dreaded roll-up certainly struck again and reared its ugly head. That roll-up, I've explained in a previous show why I believe the roll-up is being used so much. It's being used in place of a DQ. And again, if you didn't hear my show or you missed my explanation, what they're doing with the roll-up, and honestly, I'm going to start keeping track now, or somebody please start keeping track of the roll-up finishes, the cradle, the inside cradle, the schoolboy, the whatever version of the roll-up that you want to present or that WWE uses. Somebody keep track. But what I'm getting at is the roll-up is the new DQ. And where we used to have DQ finishes, there was a string of time where DQ finishes were just the lazy man's booking version of, I don't want to make anybody look bad. I want to kind of keep everyone on an even playing field. So we're just going to put a DQ out there and not give a real finish. I mean, there was a string of time, and still to this day, there are hangovers of a DQ finish, lazy booking philosophy. But in place of that, very quickly, the roll-up is becoming the new DQ finish. And as great as a match that Asuka and Bayley had, and it was really good, I was a little bit disappointed by the roll-up finish because of how often it's used. If this was a finish that was not used by WWE that often, I could buy this. But it's used multiple times a show, the roll-up finish. After all the maneuvers, all the crazy kicks to the head, and the backhand that Asuka gave Bayley, which looked brutal. I was expecting blood. I was expecting an X sign. I mean, there was no faking that unless they just did an absolutely unbelievable job of covering that up and making it look good when it was safe. I'm tending to believe that it was a real connection that wasn't meant to be. It was a true potato. And so that was brutal. But after all of these crazy maneuvers and all these kicks and knees to the head that are just throughout the WWE style of wrestling now, and really throughout all professional wrestling now, a roll-up ends the thing. I mean, it's just so apropos and so 2020 in terms of the finish of pro wrestling and how matches go. But my point about the roll-up is, and why it's the new DQ, it's a way of saying, well, yeah, that person got pinned, but it was off of a distraction, or they just caught them at the right time and happened to just get them down for a quick three count. It's still a lazy way of booking because it doesn't do anything for anybody. Yes, they got the victory, but it's almost like a sly, lucky victory. That's how all roll-ups are presented, right? Just ask Shorty G, Chad Gable. Just ask Chad Gable, who's the master of roll-ups. Every one of them is presented as like a lucky win. And that's the way roll-ups are usually presented, in a lucky scenario. And it's almost just they kind of happen to get them down for a three count. It doesn't give a decisive victor. Or it doesn't give a decisive victory for the person who actually won the match. And it kind of cheapens the win, if you will. Does anybody understand what I'm saying? I hope, you know, I know I'm talking to air. I'm talking to myself, so I guess it's easy to agree with myself. But I'm curious to see what you guys think. Please let me know, because maybe I'm overreacting to the roll-up being overused. The roll-up is like the new DQ or the new super kick, right? The overused maneuver is a roll-up now. I mean, God Almighty, just ask R-Truth in the 24/7 championship. How many times the championship changed hands on a simple roll-up? I'd say it's a high 90s percentage. It's silly. And the roll-up has made its way into matches that we're supposed to believe are legitimate, right? Anyway, the match, though, with Bayley and Asuka was really good. Asuka getting the victory, if you're going to do a silly roll-up and not have a clean have a clean victory where they hit their finish and then they win, which is how I think most matches should end, to be honest, because then it's a clear direction for the character rather than just a happy or a happenstance type of lucky win, or having that person, their opponent, be distracted, as I said. Nonetheless, Asuka was the right person to win there because there was nothing on the line. The championships were not on the line. And Asuka needs some momentum here. And if she had lost to Bayley, who's already on fire, I mean, Bayley is hot. Sasha is hot right now. They are right now a asset, and they are a staple of the WWE brand, not just specific to a actual show, Raw, SmackDown, or NXT. They are truly a tri-brand team that I do not want to see break up anytime soon. I mentioned this with Michael on my show on Sunday, which is almost 3 hours, by the way. If you love long-form audio, good God, go listen to Michael and myself talk about WWE. And we covered everything that happened in the past week, and along with some nostalgic type of talk, and it was awesome. So check that out. It's my previous show. But I am really, really digging Sasha and Bayley. I love how they're taking it even a step further back from where there could be dissension, and it's clear there's dissension, but both are in denial too. It's subtle dissension, but it's quickly resolved, and they go back to normal. What I mean by that is, each of them are volunteering the other for matches, right? How that's happened many, many times now, where Sasha has volunteered Bayley and Bayley has volunteered Sasha for matches. You had it happen this past week, and you had Sasha also accept the challenge from Asuka and Kairi Sane for the Women's Tag Team Championships next week on Monday Night Raw, of which there is an exact 0% chance of them winning. Why? Because, number one, Bayley and Sasha on all three brands is actually entertaining as hell right now, and pulling the plug on that would be terrible because then they'd only be relegated to SmackDown, because the only reason they're able to float from brand to brand is because they have the Women's Tag Team Championships. But does that really give them the right to try to challenge for a different brand's championship beyond their already won and currently holding women's tag team belts? What I mean by that is, Sasha is challenging Asuka for her Raw Women's Championship. So would that mean that if, again, this is digging a couple of levels deep, but it's just details that aren't even thought of, or at least thought of but not cared about with WWE, is say that next week Raw or Bayley and Sasha lose their tag team titles, right? And at the pay-per-view, Sasha has to defend against, or I'm sorry, Asuka defends against Sasha for the Raw Women's Championship. And Sasha wins. Sasha is not a Raw branded star, wrestler, superstar, right? So how does that work? Does Sasha automatically have to get drafted to Raw because she's holding the Raw Women's Championship? Or does she stay on SmackDown because she has the SmackDown, she's on the SmackDown roster and contracted, or at least when I say that in air quotes, she was drafted by the Fox executives in the war room. Oh God, I'm bringing back bad memories from the fall. But how does that work, right? I mean, this is probably a scenario that's not even talked about because it's not going to happen. But these little things, like how's that work, right? Nonetheless, I still enjoy the Sasha and Asuka match that's coming up in a week and a half, a little bit, actually more than that, like a week and 5 days, whatever it is. I'm really looking forward to that. And Bayley too, Bayley and Nikki Cross, where Nikki Cross this past Monday was able to somehow enter the building and make it all the way to ringside and sit next to the announcers to do her obnoxious commentary, which is not endearing, by the way. I don't know why they're doing this and continue to play like she's a giddy, obnoxious schoolgirl that enjoys hanging out with Alexa Bliss and is still kind of crazy. I don't understand how she was even there. I don't get it. I know security was there. At least there was that to present that, hey, you shouldn't be here. You're a not of this brand star. She should have just been in the crowd. If she had come through the crowd and did what she did to distract Bayley to cost her the match, fine. But for her to come on commentary was never endearing to begin with. It's obnoxious. I do not find her appealing. I actually find her extremely annoying on the microphone. I'm not against stars having accents. We've seen many accents, Southern accents, Irish accents. We've seen Jamaican accents. I mean, you go down the list. But Nikki Cross's accent is so heavy, it's distracting, and it forces her to say words very awkwardly. Usually when somebody has an accent, like Sheamus has an accent, but it fits his character because it's kind of like a very mild version of an Irish accent. Nikki Cross, her accent is so thick. Again, it's distracting and it kind of makes her come off goofy, even goofier than she already is. I'm not a fan of her character, the way it's presented. And I know she can't do anything about the accent. I get it. I'm just talking about the fact that it is very distracting. I cannot get past her accent. I've heard her talk for many, many, many months now, and I still can't get past when she speaks. When she says, I can't even do her impression, right? Like, Alexa. Like, she can't even speak in a way that makes me not laugh. And not laugh in a good way. Laughing like, this is extremely distracting from the content that you're trying to give me in this promo, because I'm too distracted on how thick your accent is. Again, this is just the way she is. Obviously, she can't do anything about the accent unless she wants to just try an American accent. I don't know. I'm not a fan of her character. The accent doesn't help. Her in-ring work is fine. I have no problem with that. Again, her promos are fine. It's just that, I don't know. Maybe I'm going on too much about Nikki Cross. I hope eventually she turns heel and gets jealous of Alexa, or as she says, Lexi, which is her real name, Lexi Kaufman. But I think that's how it's going to finally crack whenever it does, is that Nikki gets super jealous because she's like kind of like the girl, the nerdy, awkward girl at school that somehow befriended one of the popular girls and is just clinging on to her for dear life because she knows that this is her only opportunity at relevance in high school, right? Like, that's the story that I'm feeling from this and still continue to feel. Like, Alexa's kind of the calm, cool, collected, good-looking, popular chick in school, and Alexa is like the nerdy, awkward one that, again, just kind of stumbled and fell into this relationship with friendship with Alexa. And that's just the way it is. And that's how I feel it is. And I hope that eventually this does turn into a Alexa staying babyface and Nikki getting super jealous and turning heel and turning on Alexa. I think there's money in that. I really do. Because eventually this Raw women's roster is going to run thin of matchups of singles opponents. And you're going to have teams eventually break up to face one another. The problem with that is the argument against it. There's not a whole lot of women's tag teams in the entire company. And with the tag team belts still floating around, unless they dissolve those, you don't have a whole lot of depth, which means you can't have the same two or three teams kind of playing here, your turn, my turn with the belt. It just doesn't look good and it's not good for the belts. If you're going to do that, just get rid of the damn things. Honestly, this is the first time since they have introduce these championship belts, the tag team belts for the women's division, that I felt that they are somewhat important because of what Bayley and Sasha have been able to do. They were the first, they were the inaugural women's tag team champions, and this is infinitely better than that run. They are truly making this feel important. I can't say enough good about Bayley and Sasha. It's just brilliant. It's brilliant. So, again, I'll just close it off with Nikki by saying, if you've ever seen the Mean Girls movie, it was like a 2004, I think, roughly, early to mid-2000s, that movie came out. Alexa is like Regina George, all right? And Nikki Cross is like Caddy. Let's just put it that way. It just feels like that. Or Katie, whatever her name was. I know that I'm probably dating myself, or some of you are like, you like that movie? You know what? You're damn right I like that movie. That's one of my guilty pleasures. I don't know why. Mean Girls is, to me, it's entertaining. it's got some funny moments, relatability, especially back in 2004. I don't know where you guys were at that point, but I was just going into college. So anyway, all right. Moving on here to Heath Slater. Yeah. If you had told me last week I'd be talking about Heath Slater this week, I would have asked if you had a time machine, because Heath Slater has been off my radar, as many other radars. And rightfully so, because he was fired. And I know that his wife went on Instagram or Twitter and talked about how, you know, this is awful and that they have a baby on the way or something like that. And that they have to have this job to survive. And maybe that's part of it. Maybe the WWE didn't want those that went on and whined and cried on social media to really defame, not on purpose, but just kind of as a latent effect, defame and really put a sour taste in the mouth of fans and the public's general public's eye about WWE letting talent go and their livelihoods are destroyed. When you look at the people that went to social media about it and you genuinely saw their emotion, Heath Slater, he's back with the company. Drake Maverick, back in NXT. I mean, so I don't know if they're whining and crying. And rightfully so. I don't mean that in a demeaning way. Certainly they have to feed their families. They have a life to live outside of this company, and this company supports that, or their income from it supported it. So I'm sure they're getting a big pay cut, but I'm sure they said, hey, a pay cut is better than no pay. So I'm sure that their contracts, however long both of them may be, are certainly at a fraction of what it might have been when prior to their release. So, but Heath Slater comes out as a pawn of Dolph Ziggler, saying that, you know, you screwed everybody, you stabbed everybody in the back to get where you are. And Heath Slater comes out as a testament to that and cut probably the best promo that he's cut ever. I mean, he doesn't have the I got kids, and he doesn't have Cheese Whiz with Rhino in a trailer park. He has none of that. This is Heath Slater being an actual relevant character on the show, and not just relegated to comedy or being in a terrible 3MB, which was brought up, and rightfully so, given the history between Drew McIntyre and Heath. So, yeah, I mean, we don't have part three with Jinder Mahal. I wonder if that'll ever happen. But right now, this was the best work Heath ever did. And he's good on the mic. I mean, I don't know about you, but I think Heath Slater proved that he has more range than just being relegated to comedy. He showed us he can make us feel emotion. I felt emotion for the guy. I did. And I think Drew did too. He showed emotion. You know, he showed hesitation to try to not fight Heath. And Heath said that, you know, you owe me this, and you need to give me what you owe me, which I thought was going to be a championship match, but it ended up just being a fight, which was kind of weird. I thought he would give him a championship match. But Dolph was really the instigator here, trying to emotionally attack Drew. And the only thing I was disappointed about the segment was how short and how quick Heath Slater was beaten. I know that Drew is supposed to be this monster. I get it. He beat Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania. I get that. But you have to build other stars and be able to make somebody from somebody else, right? If you have Drew McIntyre out there just claymore kicking people and being a steamroller and doing what he did to Andrade and Angel Garza and Austin Theory for a few weeks after WrestleMania, and then just rolling through everyone and claymore kicking everybody with ease, it's not good. It's not good for the person who's on the receiving end, and it's actually worse for the person on the giving end, because it makes you start to resent the character as unbeatable, right? Eventually, you're going to want to see a little bit of vulnerability. And we saw a little bit of vulnerability from an emotional perspective with Drew this week, which was good. It's good. You need to see a few holes in the armor. There needs to be. Otherwise, you just, you know, you don't want Superman. Eventually, you're going to want to see somebody come around and punch Superman in the face. And we didn't get that this week. You know, I'm still behind Drew, 100%. I still love him as champion. It's a very enjoyable run. Albeit I think, underwhelming run because of the lack of fans. which is really hard to swallow, I'm sure, not just from a fan's perspective, but from a personal perspective, from the man behind Drew McIntyre, right? The character, the real man. So anyway, I just was hoping for a little bit of a fight from Heath, and it was just a very matter-of-fact, really good promo to great promo from Heath, and then boom, you're down. And I know it's really a means to an end to send a message to Dolph, because we all got to send our messages and make our statements and all that kind of thing, which, so many cliches. There are just so many wrestling announcer cliches. Like, and I don't, again, it's probably a corporate slogan or just, for whatever reason, just a mandated phrase on a weekly basis that announcers have to use. And I've got a few of them. Like I just said, they have to make a statement. They have to send a message. Or this one is used in almost, I don't want to say every match, but it's at least 50% of the matches that you watch. Somebody will inevitably say, maybe Byron Saxton. Usually it's Byron who comes up with this very just overused phrase of, and, you know, for example, and Drew McIntyre must be thinking, what have I got to do to put him away? Right? How many times do they use that or say a very game so-and-so or so, and you know, they took each other to the limit. I don't, now, here's the thing. I could break down every single phrase and why it's just awful. I can do a whole show on overused wrestling announcer phrases, especially in WWE. I do watch a little bit of AEW. I love Jim Ross. But WWE is the most sinful organization for overused tropes or just phrases and cliches by wrestling announcers that you could honestly put anybody in front of them and they would inevitably use those phrases. You know, like, why does everybody have to match up equally with everyone? And I know with Drew and Heath, I get it. They did not do it in this instance. But if you're having a true one-on-one match, why does everyone have to be on an even playing field with everyone? That helps no one. And what I mean by that is, you know, why does it have to be a landscape when it should be a portrait, right? I want a stacking order of precedence. I want a roster that is ranked. And I know AEW does this to some degree, and I love it. I don't anticipate WWE ever doing this because it would kind of tie your hands if you want to make, you know, put somebody up into a championship opportunity and their ranking isn't as high as it should be to get that opportunity. It would really handcuff you in so many ways to do rankings. It just would. I mean, I get it. But at the same time, maybe not a visual ranking where, you know, you look at the standings for MLB or NFL and you know, oh, so-and-so is 2 games behind or 10 games behind. I get it, because again, you're really putting yourself into a corner and backing yourself into a corner if you do that. But maybe a kind of mental positioning. That's what I want. I want a mental positioning for every performer on the show. I should know where they stand, who they probably could beat and should beat, and who they have no chance of beating or have zero to slim chance of beating. And instead, every match is presented as a even Steven, anybody can beat anybody at any time, and taking everyone takes everyone to the limit. Why? Why? Why should that be the case? I know that somebody's out there is going to say, well, otherwise you're just going to have lopsided matches. Well, sometimes, yes. And I'm not talking about enhancement talent. Enhancement talent are there for that sole purpose of just building people, right? But if you have an actual performer who has almost no chance of winning against, and should have no chance of winning against their opponent, then tell that story. Unfortunately, someone's going to also say to me, well, you know, we want to see great matches, right? We want to see great matches. We want to make sure that, you know, we have, you know, great moves and all that. Well, I prefer great stories over great moves. That's what I prefer. Because if I'm going to get a great story, the moves come secondary, right? If people today are more worried about the maneuvers and having great matches, which is why everyone's booked even Steven and everyone takes everyone to the limit, then you are looking at wrestling as a very superficial, just please me in a very kind of fireworks way. And what I mean by that is, when you look at fireworks, you don't really think about the one you just saw. You think about the one that's coming next. You don't even have time to absorb the one that you just saw because they're going so quickly. I guess the fireworks analogy is very apropos. It's the first thing that came to my mind. But it's true. That's how a lot of the fans today look at wrestling, as a fireworks display. It's what's next, what's next, what's next, what's next, what's next. And the finale of fireworks, what do you get at the finale of a firework presentation? It's the finale. Everyone looks forward to that. Why? Because it's hot and heavy. It's like, you know, five fireworks a second and they're just big. And that's exactly how pro wrestling is presented today as a whole. Not every single match. I get that. But a fireworks display is how wrestling is presented today. And it doesn't do anything for selling. It doesn't do anything for telling a story. It's just move, move, sell. Or, excuse me, sell is not a word I should use. It's move, register, I got hit. Move, move, move. Lack of selling. Cool moves, cool maneuvers, cool reversals. 450 splash, six suicide dives, and it ends with a roll up. It's insanity. And it doesn't do anything to see something that fast because you can't absorb what's happening. You can't feel the story. And unfortunately, WWE today has absorbed the philosophy that great matches supersede great stories because the matches are the stories. No, it's... Yeah, you tell your story in the ring, but you need to tell me how you got there. Because if you don't tell me how you got there and I care how you got there, I'm not going to care how you tell your story in the ring because I'm not invested up to from the journey up until then. And I don't need your story, or your in-ring story going 100 miles an hour. It's like reading a book and just flipping, 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 flipping the page. Cool picture, cool picture. Oh, a couple of words. I mean, I don't know. I think I'm probably in the minority of today's wrestling fan of feeling this way, but I don't need everyone taking everybody to the limit. Okay. I mean, I guess that's my story. I went way on a tangent. I mean, that's just crap. I mean, I didn't mean to do that. So I apologize, but I just went on that rant there of how I look at pro wrestling in 2020, which is just a absolute, mitigated fireworks show of just, you know, fans not emotionally invested, but they care about the moves. It's all about having the five-star match. Why? Why is it about having the five-star match? I enjoy a great wrestling match. I do. But I enjoy great stories more. Tell me a great story. Because you can really wash away a subpar physical match with great storytelling to get to that match. And that's what we saw. I mean, we've seen this before. Look back at the golden era that we all, at least in my age group of 30s, look at the Ruthless Aggression / Attitude Era as one of the greatest wrestling times in history. Yes, the star power, but what was the match type back then, right? What was the style of wrestling? It was about half the speed it was today. Less is more. Right? Less is so much more because fans can understand what's going on. Instead of them focusing on the moves and what cool moves you're doing and how quickly you can do them and show you their athleticism, they'll care about the story and get invested in your character. Otherwise, they kind of look at you as a firework. Just entertain me. Do some cool stuff. Right? And I'm not wrong. I really don't think I'm wrong here. Because I've caught myself doing that. Because we haven't gotten true great storytelling in a long time, or it's very rare when it does come by. And when it does stop by, it is a damn refreshing, just open the windows and breathe it in. Or as Jericho would say, drink it in, man. What's a great storyline, right, that I've seen? A couple. One, Rey Mysterio and Seth. We'll get to that. But the other one is Randy Orton, who continues to kill it in his heat building journey. Randy Orton has absolutely been brilliant on every level. Ric Flair is resurrecting his career. And I know the Big Show is on a war path with Randy Orton, likely at Extreme Rules. I would assume that's their destination. I would still believe that Randy Orton is going to be victorious in that. I honestly don't see Randy Orton losing, even if he faces Christian at SummerSlam, which I believe is going to be the case. Randy Orton shouldn't lose until Edge comes back. That's going to piss some people off. Imagine Randy Orton not losing until Edge comes back in, say, 4 months, 5 months. How awesome would that be? Because it would make you want to literally kill the character, right? It would make you so angry at Randy Orton. That's what you want. That's what we're looking for. And this past week is a great example. Randy Orton not really getting himself involved, being opportunistic, avoiding Big Show at all costs, trying to RKO Big Show, slides out of the ring, hits an RKO on Eric, gets a victory, and slides away after Big Show tried to pursue him once again. I mean, it's brilliant, brilliant all the way around. Big Show didn't get his hands on Orton at all. That's awesome. Great storytelling there. Great storytelling with Seth and with Rey. And we're going to get to Seth and Rey. We're going to get to my thoughts on the new United States Championship belt that was presented by MVP and Bobby Lashley. And a couple more little things. So stay right here. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the WWE Podcast. We'll be right back after this short break.
Looking for a quirky new comedy podcast? Well, look no further than ReviewParty.com, a weekly adventure of absurd user reviews led by your trusty goofball guides, Brent and Matt. Their expedition will lead you across the internet, through the dingy depths of the Amazon, past the treacherous peaks of Google reviews, and down the Consumer Reports ravines, while listening for every Yelp in between. You'll stare into the dark, digital heart of humanity, laid bare in internet reviews, and be returned with cheeks so sore from giggle fits, you'll think that you were at a party with all of your funniest friends. ReviewParty.com. Find it on Spotify, iTunes, or go to ReviewParty.com. That's ReviewParty, DOTCOM.com. ReviewParty.com. Will you join the party? Hey guys, so retirement may or may not be something that you're really thinking about, but even if you are years and years away, I mean, I'm 20 years away from retirement, but it's something that we should all be thinking about. There's a company that has retirement plans that you can invest in precious metals like gold, silver, and cryptocurrency. There's also a big opportunity to grow retirement and grow income for either your personal or a business. And anyone who signs up at this website receives a free investment kit and gift. So what is this website? It's brightmoneyinvestments.com. That's brightmoneyinvestments.com. You can diversify and grow with metals and cryptos, and you can even talk to someone there to get a better idea of what you should be investing in. So head on over to brightmoneyinvestments.com.
Welcome back to the WWE Podcast. Let's get back to more great wrestling audio.
All right, guys, welcome back to the show, and let's start talking about the United States Championship belt. And while I'm on that, I did get a question from, obviously, one of our biggest fans, DJ Kuzmo, who emailed me and asked about the belts and said, I remember you ranted a couple of pods ago, I think in April or May, about the look of the United States title and how it needs to change. MVP unveiled a new look of the United States title on Raw. In my opinion, it looks legit and way better than the previous version and the god-awful spinner version that John Cena had years ago. What do you think about it? So, first of all, DJ, thanks for listening, as always. And I agree. I like the belt a lot more. Now, I will say this. I honestly didn't despise the one before it. I think that was a co-host that I had on, I can't remember who it was, that really, really despised the look of it. It might have been Anthony, but I'm not, I don't want to, you know, pin him to it. Nonetheless, it is an improvement. It is certainly an improvement. It takes away kind of the kiddie look to it with all the colors and the flag on the belt. And it made it much cleaner. And it kind of made it a little bit towards the what they did with the Intercontinental Championship. It made it look a little bit IC title-like. And that's fine. Because they should be, at least how it's presented, on the equivalent playing field of what the belts mean, right? Because you have the Intercontinental Championship, which is on SmackDown and doing a brilliant job of it with AJ Styles holding it. And then you have the United States Championship on Raw with Apollo Crews holding that championship. Now, MVP being the one to present it is interesting. I mean, he's great, great, great on the stick and getting better, I think. With Lashley, he's taken a step back from the title picture. I think he'll interject himself immediately following Extreme Rules. And, I think that this is a really good-looking belt, and I do believe that it's possible MVP does capture the belt. It's possible. I think Apollo Crews hasn't really had time to breathe with the belt. But again, this is not a prediction show. That's coming in a week or so. Nonetheless, I do enjoy the belt. And it's funny that you mention about John Cena with the spinner belt. Man, oh man, if I had a podcast back then, it would have been X-rated. And I don't know if you guys would want to listen to me. I mean, I would have been like, you know, mid-20s. It would have been a much different version of me. But John Cena with that spinner belt was embarrassing. I mean, I remember looking at this belt and I'm like, is it seriously spinning, right? That's, I think, really what started my turn of the John Cena character, of when I started to dislike his character. I enjoyed the Dr. Orthogonomics, and when he first captured the WWE Championship against JBL at WrestleMania 22, I believe, that is really where I started to turn, though, on John Cena. And, the whole chain gang thing never really sunk in with me. It felt very childish. And maybe that's the demo they were going for, is they thought that the older fans that went through the Attitude Era were starting to check out and a new breed of fans was coming in. I don't know. The John Cena character was very corporate. I mean, he felt very Roman Reigns, but obviously a earlier version of him with, you know, the Rise Above Hate and all that kind of thing. Like, never enjoyed that. It's such a... I don't need a positive message on a program that should permit a much more fantasy world where I can just immerse myself into a little bit of violence, a little bit of great storytelling, and no propaganda. And instead, WWE, slowly through the late Ruthless Aggression, but definitely into the PG era, especially the PG era, started to just use their platform as like corporate propaganda to promote their public image of being a great, smiling, you know, anti-bullying type of organization. And I don't know, that's a whole nother rant for a whole nother day. And I'm getting on a very dangerous road. But spinner belt, disliked it a whole lot. A whole lot. I hope that belt is like censored out of WWE film and WWE network programming, right? Like, if they have the belt, it would be like a hate symbol where they just have that blur effect as if something is super offensive or it's a bad word or it's like nudity on a TV program. They put like the sensor blurring effect over the spinner belt. That's how I feel. It's so offensive, at least from the championship standpoint, right? Like, from a respect standpoint, it's just disrespectful to turn the belt into essentially a toy. It's a toy. That's what it is. You turned it into a toy or a marketing tool. That's what you tried to do. You just tried to like switch it up to accommodate John Cena's character and also at the same time use it as a marketing tool for kids who want to go, I want my own belt, Mom, so I can spin it, right? Like, that, it's marketing. I get it. But anyway, yeah, DJ, thanks for getting me on that rant about John Cena's just terrible spinner belt that just finally was abolished by The Rock in, what was it, 2011 or 12 or something. Okay, so we've been like 9 years without that god-awful representation and really defamement of the belt. Okay, moving on, I promise. Let's go. Let's talk about something else on Monday Night Raw. And that was Kairi Sane versus Sasha Banks. You know, I didn't think I'd see Kairi Sane again. I didn't. Because she has been so uninspired lately. And what I mean lately, like the last like 4 months. You could see it. Look at Kairi Sane at WrestleMania. Watch her face. She's not even excited to come out. And I get there's no fans there, but it's WrestleMania, so at least fake it. Kairi Sane has just been, it seems like she's had one foot out the door for so long. And yet, here we are with her in a prominent position against Sasha Banks. Maybe there's been a mending of fences, I don't know. But Kairi Sane defeated Sasha Banks via disqualification in a really good match. Really good match. I'm glad that they are starting to take Kairi Sane seriously, if this is indeed a sign of things to come. It may or may not be, but I really, really thought this was a nice match. One of the best matches Kairi's had in probably, I don't even know, I can't even remember the last time Kairi Sane had a really good match on Raw, or on a pay-per-view, for that matter. So, having Kairi Sane versus Sasha here was great. Another physical match that was again, well-executed, very well-executed. And the finish made sense. Again, a screwy finish. Again, here comes your DQ. She had Banks locked in a Boston Crab, and then Bayley ran in and attacked Kairi for the DQ, and then a brawl broke out between the two teams, and it ended with Sane diving onto Banks and Bayley with the insane elbow. So that was a interesting segment. Again, you don't get definitive finishes. That's the downside here. If you want to nitpick, is, you know, nobody ever definitively beats somebody, and it shouldn't be that way. It shouldn't be that way. I know that really, yeah, Kairi Sane could have suffered a loss here, and I think it would have been beneficial to Sasha because she's the one who's facing Asuka, right? She's going to be facing Asuka in a week and a half. Why would you not want to build her and use Kairi Sane as a stepping stool? And I understand, look, I am 100% behind Kairi Sane. I think she's been mismanaged and misused for a long time now on the main roster. When I say main roster, Raw. I don't mean NXT. I think she, in NXT she did some great work and was presented correctly. And Raw, she's just been kind of, she was the captain of a pirate ship that came out, and now she's just kind of like the Oriental woman who is with Asuka, who is learning English, by the way. Saying more English promos, I like that. Nice by Asuka. And maybe she's studying English more or learning how to pronounce English a little bit better, and I appreciate that. That shows initiative in trying to connect with her audience. I'm a fan of her screaming and acting like a total idiot. And I mean that in a very endearing way in Japanese. It took me a long time to get used to that. But I also appreciate her using English more, right? Because you can only take that so far with the screaming in Japanese. Eventually you have to connect with the audience that understands a language that you speak. So, but nonetheless, Kairi Sane, I don't know why they didn't give her the flat loss here. I'm a supporter of her, but Sasha Banks is the one you're trying to build here as a threat to Asuka, and you can't have her get saved by her friend and then still feel like she's a true threat to Asuka's championship. But again, really good match. Really good match with these. The women killed it on Monday night, and this was no exception. This match was certainly an asset to the show. Now on to the Seth Rollins, Kevin Owens, Humberto Carrillo, Aleister Black, Dominic, and Murphy story, right? This is getting very convoluted. There's a lot of players involved here. Now, Kevin Owens returned with the KO show and introduced his guest, and I'm glad they didn't forget that WrestleMania happened. That's always a good thing. I really was fearful that WWE was going to say, WrestleMania was so long ago, nobody's going to remember that. Well, we do, and I'm glad that they addressed it. And they didn't just, you know, Rollins and KO didn't suddenly become buddy-buddy and everything was forgotten from WrestleMania. A+. Great job at least addressing that detail. That shouldn't even be, you know, I shouldn't even have to be saying that or be concerned about that, but I was. So this storyline's, again, I've been enjoying this since day one, more than I ever thought I would. And having Dominic involved, I think, has been a good thing. He hasn't really been doing too much physically other than just kind of basic punches and taking eye gouges now from Rollins. And this whole segment on the KO show ended up with Rey Mysterio and KO defeating Seth Rollins and Murphy via pinfall. And this was I think the match was good. And it really, what was on the line here was somebody, whoever wins, gets to pick the stipulation for the match at Extreme Rules. The horror show. God, I've been saying it wrong, guys. The horror show at Extreme Rules. Why do they have to add so many words? It's Extreme Rules. Somebody in the market department is really going, you know, they have too much time on their hands sitting at home. Somebody is doing too much. And Vince's ear is listening to too much. I don't understand all of these things that just need to be added to the logos and names of pay-per-views now. It's Extreme Rules. F the horror show. It sounds like I'm reading a Goosebumps book, doesn't it? Wasn't like one of the Goosebumps book like Welcome to Horror Land or something? I think I remember reading that. It seriously sounds like R.L. Stein created the name of this pay-per-view. But I'm serious. So, again, the stipulation was on the line. If Rey's team won, he picks the stipulation. If Seth's team won, he picked the stipulation. Well, Rey Mysterio ended up winning and defeating Seth Rollins. And he got to pick the stipulation for the match. And what did Rollins choose? An eye for an eye match. And he's going to... He said he's going to pull Rollins' eye out with his bare hands. So, okay. I understand the analogy. I get the cliche of eye for an eye. It was well placed by Dominic a number of weeks ago when they had the Skype rebuttal against Seth. It's nice because it's true that, you know, obviously it should be an eye for an eye. But how do you put this in a match? How are you supposed to possibly make this? This shouldn't be, this is not a stipulation, right? How is a eye for an eye a stipulation, right? Because what that tells me is, if I'm taking this literally, that this match is only won when they're, when you rip out your opponent's eye. Really? Or you permanently damage your opponent's eye. That's how this match ends. Because that's a stipulation. No, that should be a promo, Ray. That's a promo. That's not a stipulation. There's no such thing as an eye for an eye match. Because WWE in a PG era would never sanction this. I don't even know how you pull this off. Again, if you want to say it's an eye for an eye, and then attack Seth at the end of the match or during the match to try to get retribution for what he did, sure. But what does the referee do, right? Is there a pinfall or are there submissions, right? I don't know. Maybe we'll get more clarification, but an eye for an eye match is not a stipulation. it's not a stipulation. It's a threat. I don't know. I'm starting to really question that in Rey Mysterio and not Rey Mysterio again. I got to critique the booking committee here or the writers. I don't even know what that means. Seriously, I'm telling you that the writers in WWE have never really been wrestling fans. They don't watch wrestling. It's like they're just TV producers who come on and have no idea when they say or do things of the consequences of it, like the greatest wrestling match ever. Like, why would you do that? Why would you do that? I don't know. I'm telling you, the market, and like the horror show, somebody should be fired. Whoever did the horror show at Extreme Rules should be fired. Whoever came up with the greatest wrestling match ever at Backlash should be fired. Right? And this eye for an eye, that's not a stipulation. So I'm hoping it's the same individual responsible for all three, because this person does not belong in pro wrestling storytelling. They have no clue what they're doing. Okay. Moving on. Bobby Lashley, again an MVP, defeats Cedric Alexander and Ricochet via pinfall. Hallelujah. That, to me, is a given. Bobby Lashley is just continuing to settle in nicely, or under the radar, being a dominant monster again. Goodbye, Lana. Don't let the door hit you in the ass. I mean, seriously. Oof. Okay. The Randy Orton, Andrade, and Angel Garza match, I did touch on this a little bit, defeated the Big Show and the Viking Raiders via pinfall. But what I liked about this was Randy Orton's interaction with his own team and how he has respect for Andrade and Angel Garza because they are third-generation stars. But when Angel Garza was getting hot at Andrade, Randy Orton told him to get his ass outside the ring and scolded him, basically like a like daddy. And, you know, said, "What are you doing? I'm not above, you know, putting you in the dirt." And said the F word, although it was promptly blurped out of the commentary, but very well done. I'm not complaining that was obviously censored out, as it should be. But the fact that it was even said, and WWE allowed it to be said, is telling. That they're willing to take a risk here with Randy. And it has paid off brilliantly. Randy Orton, again, has been the absolute MVP, no pun intended, for many weeks now. And I'm loving what they're doing. Randy Orton basically getting even hot at his own team. It shows the instability and the ego of Randy Orton, doesn't it? That he can't even tag with people without feeling that he needs to, you know, put them aside and take them aside as if, you know, look, I'm the leader, you're the follower, what are you doing? Like, it's just so brilliant on a psychological level what they're doing with Randy Orton. Show it unstable, how he can be triggered so easily. He's always walking on eggshells. You're always walking on eggshells around this man. I mean, you felt the tension. I don't know. This whole thing is great. I'm loving it with Randy. And no one has really gotten their hands on Randy Orton, if you've noticed. Yes, I know Edge got the victory at WrestleMania, but it was in a last man standing match backstage with inanimate objects. Okay, it didn't feel as satisfying as actually pinning Randy Orton inside the ring 1-2-3, of which nobody has done in months. Nobody has pinned Randy Orton or even really hit a finish on Randy Orton to get a victory in months. It's great. I'm so angry at the character, and I love that anger. It's something I haven't felt in quite some time. So I'm all for Randy Orton not losing a match until Edge comes back, of which when Edge comes back, there needs to be blood. And I'm serious. There needs to be color in whatever match they have. I don't care about the PG rules. Break them. Pay the fine. Have the networks get mad at you. Whatever. Or do it on a pay-per-view so you don't have to worry about the networks. But I think that when Edge comes back, it has to be blood. Edge said, "You have brought out the rated R superstar." Right? Adam Copeland's not there. The happy-go-lucky, happy-to-be-back Edge is not there. It's the rated R superstar. So go rated R. Right? Go rated R. At the Rumble, at Mania, wherever it may land, Edge needs to bust open Randy Orton, maybe even with a worked chair, where Edge snaps and hits Randy Orton over the head with a chair. A worked chair, make it as safe as possible, not real steel, and Edge or Orton cuts himself, right? And you get blood everywhere. People are going, "Oh my God, what just happened? This is PG. What is going on? Oh my God." People lose their minds. But also lose their minds in a way that, you know, again, if this is in front of an audience, people would go crazy. So just a thought. I'm getting myself hyped up for something that's probably 4 or 5 months away. It may not even happen the way, obviously, that I'm envisioning it happening. But I think I covered most of the things on Raw. Again, a couple of returns with Kairi Sane and Heath Slater that we all thought were just kind of like dead and gone. Not complaining. Good to have both back. And by the way, I adjusted my mic settings on the second half of this show. I don't know if anyone has noticed or not. I adjusted some of the recording settings and how the mic picks up sound. So if I've sounded better in the second half of the show, you're not crazy. It's just that I've been kind of screwing with the mic. But thank you guys for listening, and don't worry, I'll be back tomorrow with your wrestling nostalgia. And then on Sunday, I'll be back with your week in review with the co-host. And then on Saturday, of course, is your HSP SmackDown review with our great hosts of Brian and Greg. And then Thursday is your NXT review. We're still looking for an AEW host. I have a couple of feelers out there. If you're interested in becoming an AEW podcast host, email me at realwwepodcast@gmail.com and let me know that you're interested. I'd like you to have prior audio experience and have a passion for wrestling and know how to use a high-quality microphone, right? I mean, even if it's a USB mic, plug-and-play mic, fine, right? So just something to throw out there. And if you have any comments, questions, suggestions, or want to get on the show, send me your audio files via a voice memo at realwwepodcast@gmail.com. We're also on Instagram at @WWE_podcast or on Facebook at facebook.com/thewwepodcast. So we're on other media platforms, other social media platforms that don't, that aren't named Twitter, which is again, a shame, but it is what it is. We've moved on. And guys, that's really all I got for today. I hope everybody has a great day or morning or night. And as always, I'll talk to you soon. Hey guys, so retirement may or may not be something that you're really thinking about, but even if you are years and years away, I mean, I'm 20 years away from retirement, but it's something that we should all be thinking about. There's a company that has retirement plans that you can invest in precious metals like gold, silver, and cryptocurrency. There's also a big opportunity to grow retirement and grow income for either your personal or a business. And anyone who signs up at this website receives a free investment kit and gift. So what is this website? It's brightmoneyinvestments.com. That's brightmoneyinvestments.com. You can diversify and grow with metals and cryptos. And you can even talk to someone there to get a better idea of what you should be investing in. So head on over to brightmoneyinvestments.com.
Thanks for listening to the WWE Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast app so you don't miss a show, or head to WWEPodcast.com. And for all of these shows ad-free, head over to Patreon.com/WWEPodcast. Until then, we'll see you next time.